Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Tuesday, March 12th. This is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And we'll be reading from the Big Book on page 8 in Bill's story, the fourth paragraph down at the bottom of the page. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. Through one paragraph ending with drinkers are like that. The comments are on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Liz A. for the 12 steps, Joanne L. for the 12 traditions, and readers of the text are Dawn B. and Shelley E. The share ID for Monday, March 11th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,212. That's 21212. And for this morning's meeting, Tuesday, March 12th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 21,214. That's 21214. And our newcomer greeter is Diane B., and announcements person is Robin P. So here we go. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I will now ask Liz A. to read the 12 steps of OA. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you very much, Liz. And now I will ask Joanne L. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Joanne.
Oh, good morning, Mo. Thank you very much for your service today and everybody on the line, especially the newcomers. Welcome, welcome. And I am Joanne L. from Rhode Island, and I am recovering one day at a time. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, the a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. All leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Joanne L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to remute your phone again. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 8 of Bill's story in the fourth paragraph down, and it starts out with "my musing was interrupted by the telephone," and it ends with "drinkers are like that." And I will now ask Don B. to get us started. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. This is Don B., recovered from Southern California. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity, and I wondered how he had escaped. Of course, he would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time that we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. Well, this is a interesting paragraph. His starts off with him, you know, he's musing, he's thinking about in the previous paragraph, he's planning, you know, how he's going to get his, make sure he's got his binge substances and, you know, and concealing it and, you know, wondering how he can get by with it. And boy, I remember in the days when a lot of my thought processes were consumed by, you know, how am I going to get my binge food? How am I going to plan that out? You know, how am I going to get away so I can be with my binge foods? I would remember often picking fights with people so that I could just be alone and they would just leave me alone so that I could be with my binge foods. And then the contrast, he hears a cheery voice of an old school friend that asked if he might come over. He was sober. And just that contrast of you know, Bill being lost in thought on his alcoholic substance and the contrast of someone who is recovered. And it certainly was a contrast in my life when I became recovered. And it's, he goes on, it was years since I remembered his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed, you know. He can't imagine how anyone could possibly be sober and what the reasoning behind that would be, how anyone would have a different life. So rumor had it he had been committed for alcoholic insanity, and he was. He was going to be taken to a insane asylum, and Roland Hazard and Sieber Graves were two guys that convinced the judge to let them take Ebby to the Oxford group to try to get sober. And he did get sober through that. So he, Bill then it goes on, well, we'll have dinner and then, you know, I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, he was interested only in recapturing the spirit of old days. So Bill wants to go back to, you know, how, and maybe reminisce of how they chartered that airplane to complete a JAG, which is a binge. And Bill wants to return to, you know, the oasis in this dreary desert of futility. So an oasis being, you know, a refuge, a relief from this unpleasant contrast of Bill's life at this point. Bill had, it says in the book Pass It On, talks about Bill during this time. He is 40 pounds underweight. He was just drinking like a bottomless binge of one drunk after another, just lost in his disease, absolutely. And so here's the light shining on this, and what a beautiful light came into this dark, dreary desert of futility that Bill was experiencing, and that was Ebby. May we, each of us.
Time.
Oh, thank you. I pass.
Well, thank you very much, Dawn, for Dawn B, for getting us started. And I will now remind you that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared, if you have shared in the last 3 days, please skip today and come tomorrow. So we're on page 8 of Bill's story. That fourth paragraph down, my musing was interrupted by a phone call, and it ends with, drinkers are like that. Who would like to share on this paragraph?
Maria C. in California.
Maria?
Yeah, Maria C. is in Charlie.
Gotcha.
Ronnie B., Missouri.
Ronnie B.
Pat E. in the UK.
Who was that? From the UK? Pat? Was it Pat?
Claire E. in the UK.
Okay. Thank you.
Deb E. in Israel.
Deb E. Anyone else?
Vanessa G. in New Mexico.
Vanessa G.
Joan Marie from Vegas.
Joan Marie. All right, let's stop there. I have Maria C., Ronnie B., Kat, I think, from the UK, Deb E., Vanessa G., and Joan Marie. Everyone else mute except Maria. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, everyone. This is Maria C. from Southern California. I'm so excited that we have this paragraph today. You know, of course, we know it's coming. It's a paragraph or two at a time, but I have a new sponsee, and we went through the first half of Bill's story last night together over the phone. And right at the end of our time for, you know, the day, we got to this paragraph. And, you know, as I was speaking about it with the sponsee, she remarked that she didn't have an Ebby, didn't have a friend like this, hadn't been 12-stepped in by anyone, you know, wish she had. And what I didn't say at the time, but, you know, thank goodness for this meeting, because I learn every day I come, that the answer just was so obvious to me this morning, that like I can be that person for somebody else, and she could be that person for somebody else, somebody who doesn't even, who's in their darkest moment, you know, because Bill, you know, it was the darkness before the dawn for him as he was sitting there, his friend was sober and he's going to try to convince him to drink again. You know, that's pretty dark in my humble opinion. What was also nice about last night is we were out of time, but I had her read the first couple of sentences, the next little tiny paragraph where Bill opens the door, because I was like, you know what, let's start the dawn before we leave off and then finish tomorrow. So just really grateful to hear it again, because going through this, you know, every time all of these lines hit a little differently. So thank you guys for listening. I pass.
Thank you very much, Marie C. Up next is Ronnie B., followed by, I think it's K in the UK. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Ronnie B. in Missouri, compulsive overeater. I really paid attention to the reading as it was happening today, and sometimes I drift. I drift, and then when I have my name in the lineup, I'm like, I wonder what that paragraph was like. But today, for some reason, I was just present, and I'm always in my best place when that happens. Anyway, I've read the paragraph a gazillion times, and I've heard the phrase an oasis. And I was just thinking about the grandiosity of my history with this addiction and all of them, but certainly my compulsive overeating, and always giving the impression that there was no problem in my home. And I wanted others to see me as elevated in my position, no matter what it was. I mean, I could have been in the gutter, but I wanted you to see me up on the curb. And so this one time, and it was decades ago, one of my little dogs was hit by a car. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be about the day I was eating. That's just like food is but a symptom. And when this little dog died, I was devastated. But what I did, I thought it was showing my love, is I actually called a company that came, and they buried my dog in a cemetery, which I don't care what anyone else does. I thought this was a great thing. But even, it was like, it was before my recovery began, so more than 40 years ago, it was like $1,000 to do that. But I thought that was showing my love, you know, that was my form of an oasis. Look at me, I can do all of this. And now you know how much I cared about that animal. But of course, you know, once I get in recovery, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? Well, I wasn't in my addiction. And I don't today when my addictive thoughts take over. But that was an extreme. But it wasn't an outlier. I mean, I did things like that so other people would know. And in terms of just the food, I can remember that I would only be around people that were eating like And if they didn't, my time with them was very limited. Or I would want to be grandiose and one day watch them eat and say, look at me. Aren't I doing so great? You know, it's almost like that line in the Big Book. The guy comes up from the cellar after a storm and says, ain't no problem here. And I did that. You know, I wanted to think of myself as just very sane. And the more I thought of myself as sane today, I can see that was very insane. Anyway, I am really grateful. I am really grateful to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Ronnie B. Up next is, I think it's KC from the UK, and then Deb E. Good morning.
Hi there, my name's Claire E. from the UK.
Oh, Claire. Okay, sorry, Claire.
No, don't worry, it's okay. I'm amazed you hear all of them anyway. So I'm a recovered bulimic and compulsive eater in Cornwall in the UK. And it's a really funny paragraph, actually, because I was thinking about my own eating and my bulimia and my binges. And honestly, they were not sociable things. You know, there's no reminiscing with friends about the good old days of binging, you know, because I always isolated. It was something I did by myself in private, behind closed doors. And I presented to the world, you know, what I thought was a picture of normality, and what I did behind closed doors was very, very, very abnormal. But I really relate to Bill W's delusion and yearning to recapture the pleasure, you know, to recapture the good stuff, to recapture the times when it worked, you know, the times that it did it for me. And, you know, that delusion that somehow, you know, there's this great, great obsession of every abnormal drinker is that somehow someday we're going to control and enjoy our eating. I was after that. I was always after that. And it just wasn't like that anymore. You know, it stopped working for me. It stopped working. It stopped being a pleasurable experience. And yet somehow in my head, I still managed to sort of somehow think that it was going to be some sort of oasis in my dreary, irritable, restless and discontent. And the other thing that really made me chuckle a little bit is, you know, my musing was interrupted by the telephone, you know, and the paragraph before sees him ruminating and obsessing and where he could hide it and, you know, how he was going to get hold of it. And then the telephone rings. And that's what happens to me today. You know, I can be really in myself. I can be in a resentment. I was doing this on Sunday afternoon, actually. I was feeling a bit sorry for myself. I was in some minor resentment. So I was feeling a bit low. I was feeling a bit sorry for myself. And then the telephone rang. And you know what? That happens to me a lot these days. You know, people reach out to me. I reach out to other people. And it interrupted me. And that is just such a pertinent phrase for me these days, because I need that. I so need that. And one of the things I heard on a podcast once that I really value is that I need to set up my life such that I have these constant musings and interruptions to my musings, so that, you know, with meetings, with fellowship, with program, with sponsees, so that my head is turned outside of itself, so that I get out of me. And you know, this particular fellow that rang me on Sunday, we had a lovely chat. We spoke about some really good spiritual stuff, an assignment and a workshop that we've both been listening to. And hey presto, when the phone went down, I wasn't ruminating, I wasn't in resentment. And you know, so this paragraph is as pertinent to my day-to-day recovery today as it is in terms of my Ebby experiences right at the beginning. So I need the constant interruption to my musing. I really do. I need that interruption and getting out of sight by being of service to other fellows and connecting with others. And I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you. Claire E. from the UK. Up next is Deb E., followed by Vanessa G. Good morning, Deb.
Hi, Mo. Thanks. This is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. That's funny. I was thinking something similar, like that first line about being interrupted by the telephone. I was thinking about how in early recovery, when I still really wanted very much to be in the food and, you know, I was trying not to be, and I would get a call that would interrupt me. But here in this paragraph, gets interrupted, but then he starts thinking about, like, all the different ways he's going to drink with his friend, right? And it had the opposite effect on me in those moments where it was like, oh, I kind of ruined the plan I had, and it reminded me of the solution. And this part about, you know, he was sober. Rumor had it had been, you know, I was amazed he was sober. And it made me think of this. I have this clear memory of this meeting I was at. It was either like right at the like 1 year mark of finding OA or right around that time. And there was somebody sharing about, like, unfortunately had gone through a lot of difficult things, like one after another. And they hadn't used food. And I was just convinced they were lying. I was like, impossible. You know, it just can't be. Like, I couldn't at that moment in my recovery, at that moment in my life, I could not see how there was any way out of this. Even though I had been going to meetings for a year, I had been like shown, you know, the solution. I just still couldn't see. I didn't think it was going to happen for me. And of course that wasn't true. And it did. But, and then the last part about, the oasis, you know, made me think of the oblivion, you know, that I would eat to go into oblivion. So I could just forget about everything. And he's like, you know, he's getting all excited about like, oh, great. I've got my buddy here who's going to help me do that. Of course, you know, he gets very disappointed after it doesn't happen. But it also makes me think of how my higher power will send people to me with exactly the message I need to hear. And I think I'll pass with that. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Debbie, before I take Vanessa, let me remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 8 in Bill's story, the fourth paragraph down. My musing was interrupted by the telephone, and it ends with, drinkers are like that. And we're just commenting on that one paragraph only. And after the next two shares, I'll pick some more names. Good morning, Vanessa.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you, everyone who's on this meeting and everyone who makes Vision possible. My name is Vanessa G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in New Mexico. The meeting this morning has had me reflecting on all the Ebbies that I've had in my life, but in particular, I've been thinking a lot about the person who brought me to my first 12-step meeting, my first OA meeting. We're both in our mid-20s, and we both, you know, we had such fun together. And we worked together, and one day she came to me and she asked me if I would go with her to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. And we went, and, you know, I left there, you know, just totally disenchanted with the people that were there. You know, I couldn't relate at all. I thought that they were, you know, way too extreme and way too emotionally troubled to be like me. And ended up not coming back to OA for a number of years. But she brought me there, and I knew where to go a few years later, and probably helped me get into other 12-step programs just by giving me that awareness. But unfortunately, 9 years ago, she passed away. And she passed away from an overdose. One evening, whether it was accidental or intentional, I don't know. I do know that she has, you know, with moods for years and had never found any kind of recovery from her compulsive, you know, overeating. She, in fact, you know, when her father read her eulogy, he talked about how she very plaintively asked him, you know, one time, why do I do this? You know, why am I afflicted this way? And it just reminds me this morning of how deadly this disease is and how lucky I am to be in recovery and to be here with you all. What a blessing. And I'm here because a friend called me one day and the telephone interrupted, you know, what I think was my impending death. And I'm just grateful for that. But at the same time, I'm missing my friend this morning and hoping that, you know, she has the peace that she's been looking for. And very grateful for her introducing me to 12-step recovery all those years ago in our mid-20s. So I hope she's, you know, resting now. Thank you guys so much for listening to me. I've had many other release, and I'm grateful for them too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks Bye-bye. Very much, Vanessa. Thank you very much, Vanessa G. Up next is Joan Marie, and after Joan Marie, I'll take another lineup of names. Good morning, Joan Marie.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service. Thank you for the share so far. Different words stood out to me. He was sober. Many times in this journey, I've been in and around OA for a long time, I was abstinent, but it was through dieting, restricting. I was a purger, but I couldn't throw up, though I tried, so I used laxatives to purge.
Excuse me, I can't hear you.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now? Is that better? Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right. So, yeah, he was sober. That stood out to me. I was abstinent many times, but I was not recovered, living in recovery. I was on a diet. I was restricting. I was binging, starving, and I would use laxatives to purge. I couldn't throw up, but I tried. And so that's part of my story. Also, when he said, unmindful of the welfare of his friend, that brings that selfishness, that centeredness, that self-seeking that is so prevalent among us, and not any thought of anyone else. How can I get it? Where can I get it? How much can I get it? And will anybody notice that so I won't be embarrassed? I mean, what a way to live. It was insanity. And doing the same thing over and over, eating my alcoholic foods over and over and over, and I got the same results every time. They say that's insanity. Yes, I was insane when it came to food in any way. I'm so grateful for this program. I mean, it literally saved my life, and I'm grateful for everyone that's on this line that opens up and shares their heart, because that gives me tools, that gives me hope. And that's the very part of Alcoholics Anonymous, a story of how many thousands, well, we're in the millions now, of men and women have recovered from alcoholism, my alcoholic foods. Thank you so much for letting me share. God bless. I'm eager to hear the rest.
Thank you very much, Joan Marie M. from Nevada. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to give me their name? Get in the next lineup.
Bruce E.
Brenda A. New York.
Veronica
Deb
B.
S.
Katya Z.
Wait a minute. After Brenda, I think it was Veronica. And then who was after Veronica?
Katya Z.
Katya?
Yeah, K-A-T-Y-A.
Oh, Katya. Okay, gotcha.
Deb X.
Deb X.
F, as in Frank.
Oh, F. Got it. Okay, I have Bruce E., Brenda A., Veronica. I didn't get a last initial quickly enough. Katya and Deb F. Let's stop there. And so everyone mute your phone except Bruce E. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Mo. It's Bruce E. I'm recovered in Southwest Florida. Very grateful to be on the call today. Grateful I'm recovered. Grateful that I'm not...
Bruce, we lost you. Press star one, Bruce.
Okay, I'm here. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry for that interruption. I was muted. Yeah, I'm Bruce E. I'm a recovered compulsive eater in South Fort Myers, Florida, and very grateful to be on the call. Very grateful that this telephone call is an oasis. And I've had a few oases, you know, now Bill's looking for, you know, to get away from his, he wants to still drink, but then he wants to have some relief from it too. And he's really, really right at the bottom. And his friend calls him, you know, perfect timing, you know, God's timing is perfect. So it's perfect timing. He calls him right when he really needed the call. And, I mean, it reminds me of my really good friend, Richard. He's probably my best friend, one of my best friends. And I asked him if he'd sponsor me when I first got into OA, and he did. He said he would. And we worked together. We worked through a lot of the steps together. Sponsored me for a long time. Gave my food over to him, stuff like that. He was a really good He was good for me and good for the program way back then, 35 years ago, longer than that probably. And he used to go out and, you know, before, you know, two or three, I think he went two or three meetings a week, maybe four, and he'd go around and pick up people, pick them up at their homes and bring them to a meeting. And, you know, if you're only going to have three or four or five at a meeting, then all of a sudden now you got, you know, seven, eight, nine at a meeting. So it's kind of neat. And, you know, I really appreciated him. He was he was an oasis. He really was. He was just a refreshing person in the middle of all this. And it took me a long time before I really got it. You know, it really did. But that helped me to get on my way to trying to get it, you know. And he's beautiful, you know, it really was. And I really appreciate Richard. He's gone on. He's passed on now. And I don't know if he was sober when he passed on. I don't know. I don't know if he was. I saw him a few times a year or two before he died, and, you know, he looked okay. So I hope he was all right. But that was always, he was like the Ebby to me, you know. He showed up when I really, really needed somebody. And he really guided me through for quite a while. Really appreciate that and him. Appreciate people like him. So with that, I pass.
Oh, thank you very much, Bruce E. Up next is Brenda A, followed by Veronica. Good morning, Brenda. Press star one.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Brenda A in New York. When I read this, recovering one day at a time, when I read this paragraph, I started thinking about who my Ebby is. And when I started to think about it, I've had multiple Ebbies. I've had Ebbies, you know, God sent them to me. My first Ebby was a psychiatrist, and she had said to me, you know, when you're ready, you'll be ready. And at that point, I had been dieting. I was around 20 pounds overweight. I was miserable. I thought everything was my fault. And that was because my self-will wasn't working. It didn't make any difference how much money I made, how much someone loved me, how good my life was. I was so controlled by food. Food was my solution, very honestly. But that sadness and anger dominated me. And then as I moved along, as I said, there were multiple Ebbies, whether they were in program or not. And no one begged me. No one pleaded with me because I was such a fraud. I looked pretty good on the outside. I always had a smile plastered on my face. But the truth of the matter was, just like Bill, I was so dependent on others, on what they thought of me. And I fought when I came into this program, and I still fight from time to time, to hand everything over to a higher power. And like so many people have said, why would God have time for something as ridiculous as controlling my binging? Well, what I know today, nothing is too small and nothing is too large for God to take care of. And I pray every day. I pray for God's direction. I pray, you know, I ask God, tell me who I can be of service to, and God, tell me how I should be. And it's all in the name of service to others, and I am grateful. I'm grateful to God, who is my ultimate Ebby. I'm grateful for his patience, his tolerance, for him saying the sick prayer over me. Yeah, I am sick. I have a disease, and I've had to accept it. Thank you for listening. I pass.
Thank you very much, Brenda A. Next, we have Veronica, followed by Katya. Veronica, what's your last name?
Hi, good morning. I'm Veronica B., like in Blessed, recovered compulsive overeater in California. Thank you, Mo, for your service. Mm-hmm. I really have loved all the shares, and I committed to my sponsor back in 2020 when I discovered Vision for You. I committed to her that I would share once a week so that I could be part of this home group. I consider this meeting my home group so that I can contribute in my recovery. And even though sometimes I don't want to share, I made a commitment, and so I try to be consistent with that and honor my recovery. So this paragraph, I love the sharing, you know, so Bill is having a really hard time, his drinking is progressing, he's not doing well, you know, there's no friendly direction, and he gets this call from his friend, and he's intrigued, you know, he's really happy to hear from his sober friend, well, his friend that he used to drink with, and he can hear something different in his voice, you know, and then he goes on to mention that he had heard that he had been, he had been locked up for alcoholic insanity. So I could only imagine that Bill is having a hard time, his drinking is progressing, and he gets a call from his friend that he used to drink with, and that he heard his friend was doing really poorly, but now he gets a call, and his friend is all cheery, and if it were me, I would be very curious. And the fact that, you know, someone mentioned the fact that Bill just wants to have a drink with him kind of shows his selfishness of like, oh, yay, somebody's going to be able to join me, you know, because it's lonely when you're in your disease all by yourself. And this is the power of one compulsive eater talking to another compulsive eater. Because what Evie's about to do, he's going to be an attraction to Bill. That's why it's so important that we are walking attractions to people who might be in their last 30 days of recovery, people who need to be in this program and live this way of life. You know, we are the attraction. I am the walking big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So he's going to be an attraction for him. And that's going to, you know, change his life. It's going to change his life. The way when before I came into Overeaters Anonymous, I was desperate. I was lonely. I was in my disease. I couldn't, you know, I was in a deep hole. I felt like I couldn't get out. And there was a woman in my home group, because I'm also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I watched this woman. She was happy. She was losing weight. And I wanted to know what she was doing. She was an attraction to me, and that's like the power, right? She was the walking example of a recovered woman, and so I'm just really grateful. So thanks for letting me share.
Hey, thank you very much, Veronica B. Next we have Katya, followed by Deb F. Katya, can I have your first initial of your last name?
Sure, it's Z, like Zen or Zoo.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for everyone who does service at this meeting. My name is Katya. I have never shared on a Vision for You meeting. I've been listening on the phone lines for about a month. I have a sponsor in this program, and that's what brought me into Vision. And I love that we're reading Bill's story, because we started reading Bill's story a couple of weeks ago, and I definitely relate to the bottoms. But what I also realized, because I'm abstinent, is that I'm addicted to feeling bad and talking about how I'm feeling bad and then reaching out for help for feeling bad. And just being on this meeting, it's 7:45 here in LA, and just talking makes me realize how important it is to get outside of myself versus to wake up and then stew consistently in my problems. And I'm really beginning to realize that what Ebby was to Bill, I have so many fellows in program and in these rooms who are here and are stands for me and for my recovery and showing everything that's possible. And so my hope is that I can start to go outside of myself one step at a time, slowly doing all these steps, reading the big book, and experiencing that for myself. So thank you so much for letting me share.
And thank you, Katya Z. And our last share will be Deb F. Good morning, Deb.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Deb F. And I just wanted to say that I was thinking about who my Ebby was, and I've had many. I was the big rebel. My parents always said, you don't need 12 steps. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, but they couldn't help me with my food addiction. And, you know, their methods were, you know, less than desirable. And, but I know when I was sitting across from a teacher one day in the break room having lunch and going, geez, why do you eat that big salad every day? And then she tells me, well, I had this little problem with eating. And she started to describe it. And I'd never heard anybody talk like that before. So she said, well, we have a meeting tonight. And so I went. Of course, I was full of my own ideas. I didn't get it for a long time. But I had people, some people to surround me. And, you know, trying to force me to take the ideas that I wasn't ready to take yet. But there were people around me. And I knew that it helped to talk about things there. I felt like, hey, this is better than therapy. And then jump forward to like 35 years, maybe close to 40 now. And I just had a sponsor who said, okay, let's go back and start the steps over again and see what you missed. And I'm like, I remembered that, but I got a different sponsor. And that's the attitude I've been taking. To see what I've missed. And, you know, maybe my Ebby is my sponsor, but it's also all the recovered people that I call every day here. So you guys, recovery matters. And thank you so much for the simplicity of Vision here. It's not about a food plan. It's about your own alcoholic foods and then working the steps and seeing what, you know, has gotten hold of me that, say, you know, my twist of the mind and my, you know, mental obsessions and on top of the allergy. So I'm just really grateful for that. And thank you so much for everyone here. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Deb F. So, thank you all who gave service today. It's perfect timing. I appreciate that. And we will now close with a reading from the big book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And will Shelley E. please read a vision for you?
Absolutely. Good morning, Mo. Good morning, my fellows. I'm Shelley E., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Arlington, Texas. The big book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you for the